We have to start today's session an extraordinary person in the case of Miss Mona Abu Suleiman. She is a leading media figure throughout the Arab countries, the Middle East, and the Islamic world in terms of researching and producing and directing various episodes dealing with issues pertaining to family, to culture, to education, to economics, to politics, and to gender. She is the executive director of the Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal Kingdom Foundation, one of the most renowned and rightly so charitable foundations and institutions in the world, not just in her own country and in the region. She has been before that director of its strategic studies, where in a visionary and programmatic capacity, she has researched and sought out worthy causes and non-governmental organizations with which her foundation can have an associational link to build the human resources capacity to sustain those organizations, projects, programs, events, and activities over time. We're one of the beneficiaries of that kind of assistance, but one of many others. So is Harvard University, so is Georgetown's Center for Muslim Christian Understanding, and so has been the United Nations and innumerable other institutions. The image of many people from the ruling family of Saudi Arabia not being actively engaged or in civic affairs is the opposite of the reality for those who are specialists and who have lived in the country and worked alongside its people for any length of time. And certainly Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal would be at the top of the list of the individuals who has done something that he didn't have to do and its staff didn't have to do, but out of conviction and compassion and commitment have done every single day since the establishment of the foundation. In terms of her television programs, those that she has researched and programmed and produced, there have been more than 200 episodes on Middle East Broadcast Corporation television satellite stations that are viewed by tens of millions of Arabs worldwide. She has been recognized by the World Economic Forum, by the United Nations, and by subgroups of the World Economic Forum as an extraordinary woman leader. She has been for the last 11 years also a teacher of American literature at King Saud University. There are very few amongst America's 4,200 universities, American professors who teach about Arab or Arabic literature. So you can understand how this person is indeed a bridge builder. It's often said that the only thing longer that a person can leave behind than her or his shadow is an institution. That's two-thirds true. One can also leave behind a role model, an inspiration, for those who are with us and those who will come after us. That's Miss Mona Abu Suleiman.
Wow, that was a great introduction. Now, even I want to hear my own speech. Thank you so much. You are so kind. It is a pleasure to be here today with the National Council. John Duke Anthony and his team are so tireless in promoting the exchange of ideas and networks that are so needed and have to occur in conferences like this if we want to change the world. According to Aristotle, to give money is an easy matter, but to decide to whom to give it to, how large, when, and for what purpose and how is neither in every man's power nor an easy matter. Actually, it's so tough that Warren Buffett subcontracted Bill Gates for it. There are so many calls for new, innovative approaches to traditional giving all over the world. Out with the old, in with the new. But what really works? What worked? What worked where? What are the issues we should try to work on? These are some of the questions that we face at the Foundation, and I'm sure many of you, on a daily basis. And in the fallout of the current global economic crisis, the amount of people living in poverty is sure to skyrocket. We're going to end up paying a very high price for poverty, which is why we need to work together to find lasting global solutions to end poverty and not just fix outdated systems. The United Nations Development Program, which I am an ambassador of, has 8 millennium goals to end poverty, improve people's lives, improve living conditions, and they're very well known. The 8th goal, the last one, the one that calls for global partnership for development, is not as well known. Yet, out of all the goals, it is the most important. Otherwise, we'll never be able to tackle the enormous amount of problems facing humanity by ourselves. Like the rest of the world, there's a growing number of Arabic mavericks. No, I hate saying that word, but they really are mavericks. Businessmen who have taken the task of changing the world. And they do it through a lot of philanthropy. They want to fuel development. And despite new strides being taken every day, there's still a very long path to adequately bring the approaches, techniques, and delivery to international standards. And they're very urgently needed. Facing them, and facing people who work for them, like me, are a number of challenges and obstacles, both from within and without our societies. And I'm going to go into them, because they're very important. But before I do that, I want to just provide a little bit of context. Regarding the beginning of Arab philanthropy, it's not new. A lot of people think it just started in the past 20 years. It's not. As long as Arabs have been around, there's been a lot of giving. It stems out of being in the desert. If you don't do altruistic giving, one day you're going to die because you're going to need somebody to give. So we give and we share, and it has lasted into the 21st century. And also, Islam, which a lot of Arabs are Muslims, has tithing or zakat. Every capable person has to give 2.5% of their savings, not income, savings, to charity or the neediest members of society. That's a lot of money. And you think if everybody gives money, the Christians give tithing and we give zakat, there wouldn't be a lot of poverty, yet there is. Zakat is supposed to be a mechanism that prevents wealth accumulation in the first place. It helps to keep the monetary circulation system of an economy healthy. It's a built-in structure that attacks poverty from the inside out. And with oil prices rising, even if they're at 64 right now, or 62, is it 62? How much money are we losing? 60? Still, it's a lot of liquidity that enables people in our parts of the world to be very much more generous. The difference is that now, instead of only wealthy individuals giving, we're seeing a lot of sovereign wealth funds coming in, even governments, and they're all trying to team up with NGOs and the public sector to solve some of the pressing issues that we see. The second misconception that I would like to talk about is the Islamic finance system. It's a competing economic model, and we are here, and a lot of you realize that the Islamic finance system is growing both in the West and actually in academia. Because it's not reactionary, it's not backwards, like a lot of people are saying. The reason it's reviving is that it works. There is an inherently charitable structure in that system, and that's a hot topic today. For example, the system discourages massive deposits of liquidity, which is a hallmark of the capitalistic system. It's done through prevention of excessive interest-bearing loans, what Warren Buffett calls financial weapons of mass destruction. Also, not selling what one doesn't have, which seems very simple, but maybe wasn't so simple 8 months ago. It's not very glamorous. The system is not very glamorous, but it has a lot of good common sense. The added benefit is that when a system like that is applied, it does prevent excessive wealth inequality. And therefore, the job of the philanthropist is made easier. It's about fixing the social problems from happening in the first place. And that's something that we need to really look at while we're regulating the market. Another cultural misconception about philanthropy and women is that, and I'm sure I don't need to rehash all the old misconceptions of oppression of women to this audience at least, and we all know the difference between Islam, religion, and culture. But what is not known, that the biggest donors in Islamic world have been women. They're the ones who are funding some of the greatest civic and academic institutions, because 1,400 years ago, they came to be in possession of wealth en masse, not one, not two, but everybody. So suddenly we had a new class of donors. There are so many examples. I actually had a hard time limiting them, but I'm just going to actually say two examples, two of my absolute favorites. Fatima Al-Fihri is a wealthy Moroccan heiress in the 19th century. She founded what is often held up as the first institution of higher learning in the world at the Qarawiyyan Mosque in Fez. Basically, she was so envious of the jami'a where men went to learn that she feminized it. She created the jami'a, the Arabic word for university today. Her university grew to be a seat of academic learning. Ibn Khaldun graduated from there, and also somebody called Gerbert of Arilac. Maybe other people know him as Pope Sylvester II. A modern parallel is the work of Sheikha Moza al-Misnit, the First Lady of Qatar. There's an impressive development of the knowledge city in Doha. I might disagree with some of the methods that are going on. I might disagree with some of the priorities that she's doing, but I have to admit that what she is doing is strengthening the social and educational infrastructure of her country and hopefully the GCC world. Right now, there are a lot of sources, new sources of income. There's increasing economic maturation, and there's progress in governmental transparency and oversight. Not enough, but there is progress. And it has contributed to a lot of money that is being given to charity. Not only that, but the money is actually being used in a sophisticated and complex way. And there are key trends that are happening right now in the Arab world. But before I go into the trends, I'll just discuss the past trends. In the 70s and 90s, there was this put out the fire kind of aid. A lot of us, for the first time in our lives, saw televised for the first time young children having flies over their eyes with distant bellies and villages that are devastated and wars as they were occurring. And that shocked us, and it made us, Arabs and non-Arabs everywhere in the world, dig deep into our pockets and give. And as a result, we all felt very good. You know, we were helping the world. The problem is that today, these orphans still stare at us from our television sets. And the same devastated villages, are going through wars again. And the 20th generation of flies are still on the eyes of these young children. We haven't seen much change. There are 3 billion people living on $2 a day or less. Vast nations that are so underdeveloped that it's heartbreaking. And many more joining the ranks or on the brink of collapse because of AIDS, intestinal worms, poverty, famine, malaria. The leading cause of death for children under 6 are the last 4. All simple medical causes that have been eradicated in the West, but still terrorizing the rest of the world. Around 1990, a change started to occur. The newest wave of giving was born out of the desire to see real change occur. And out of many business people who are giving, are now giving during their lifetime rather after they pass on, so that they can see how their money is being used. Now there's an intense desire to support intellectual inquiry and academic, culture, and social reform through structured and strategic giving. This is a major change that has occurred, I think, beginning from California and spread all over the world. The core aim has switched to finding long-term solutions. And as a result, there's a growing awareness of the underlying causes of the world's core conflicts. But the vastness of these problems is overwhelming. This is why the idea of redistributing wealth from the inside the system is much better than actually trying to fix it once it occurs. The trends that I was talking about, the trends that we're seeing today in the Arab world, are as follows. Zakat giving is slowly being revolutionized. There's a breakthrough in how zakat is handled and directed, but it needs to happen a little bit faster. The idea is not to stop helping those we know, not to stop those individual people giving to individuals, but that we realize that we're not leveraging the benefit from utilizing those donations in the most effective way possible. So a change of method needs to be looked at. Also, what to do with one's... I only have 2 more minutes, and I have like 5 pages. So I'll go...
That was a Valentine's Day card.
A lot of love in 2 minutes. What I'll do is... So zakat giving needs to be revolutionized. We need to look at... We need to look at how to do strategic giving, and we need to look at global partnerships. The global partnerships is perhaps the most important point, because a lot of changes are occurring in the Arab world, but there's a lot of fear. There was a conference in Amman that discussed how the USA, which is the pioneer in philanthropy in today's world, is actually terrorizing the rest of the world. People are afraid to give outside of their local area. They're afraid to reach out. They're afraid to be labeled 25 years later as a terrorist. And today, we have to realize that in the world of philanthropy, we were complacent and guilty until proven innocent to a lot of those great philanthropies and great charities, and that we need to look at our own methods of vetting people. We shouldn't let our weird last names be the verdict of who we are. And I think for too long we've stood silently because of a few people's actions and we were afraid to speak up. But that is actually coming to an end. The persistence of human goodwill cannot be suppressed for long. And that's one of the challenges that we have to face. How do we work with the United States? Because it is the pioneer. It does a lot of great stuff. A lot of great initiatives do come out of the U.S. and they do help the rest of the world. But if people are afraid to take U.S. money, and if people are afraid to reach out to the U.S., then we're losing out. We are seeing a campaign that might succeed based on pennies that are given every day, almost to the tune of $150 million in 1 month. So just imagine if we actually harness the power of individual givers, philanthropists, the foundations, the corporate social responsibility units of corporations, and actually work together with the U.S., how many of today's world problems can really be eradicated? I think I'm going to end by saying that there's a faulty concept of clash of civilizations, and I think people like us in today's conference need to think about how to strive for a collaboration of civilizations. It's a new paradigm to move U.S.-Arab relations forward, and I think we are the people to take it on. I hope you agree. Thank you.